true. But what they were afraid of was to be seen helping Captain Fuchs. It was one thing to help build his ship deep in the belt unseen by prying eyes, but to openly join his crew? Very few had the courage to do that. He had to hire cutthroats like Bahadur. The memory of poor Sanjay dead in his bunk flashed through my mind, and Bahadur exploding into a shower of blood. "Do not think badly of the captain," Nodan told me. "He is a man who has suffered much." "At the hands of my father," I added silently. Making headway. We were sinking lower and lower as we drifted slowly toward the planet's night side. It was a planned decrease in altitude that Fuchs calculated would bring us above the eastern highlands of Aphrodite Terra, where Phosphorus most probably lay. I only hoped Alex's ship had come to rest low enough so that we could spot it against the bright radar reflections of the mountain's upper slopes. I felt the need for a shower after my shift at the pumps, but didn't have the time. Instead, I merely pulled on a clean set of coveralls, popped my pile of ripe-smelling ones into the automated laundry unit, and then hurried up to the bridge. Fuchs frowned at me as I took over the comm console, but said nothing. I couldn't help staring at him. If I had been in his place, if I had gone through what he'd gone through, how would I feel about having Martin Humphreys' son aboard my ship? Why didn't he just let me die? What was going on in that angry, bitter mind of his? Toward the end of the watch, a call came through from the heat exchange station. I slipped the receiver plug into my ear and tapped into the translator program. "Captain, sir, it will be necessary to shut down the central unit for maintenance now," the technician was saying. The computer's flat, unemotional translation took all the expression out of the message, but I could hear the technician's guttural, growling dialect in the background. I swiveled my chair slightly so I could see Fuchs's face reflected in one of my empty screens. He frowned sourly. "It is necessary, Captain, sir, if we are to avoid a failure of the main heat exchanger," the technician went on. "I understand," Fuchs said. "Proceed." "Should I alert the crew?" "You do your job," Fuchs snapped. "I'll handle the crew." "Yes, sir." To me, Fuchs called, "Humphreys, put me on the ship's intercom." "Yes, sir," I said with a crispness I did not really feel. "This is the captain speaking," Fuchs said. "We're going to get a little warmer for a few hours while one section of the main heat exchanger is down for maintenance." He thought it over for a moment, then said, "That is all." As I closed the intercom circuit, he ordered me, "Get Dr. Duchamp on screen, Humphreys." I got no answer from her quarters. She was in the sick bay. "You heard my warning about the heat," Fuchs said to her image on his main screen.
"Yes, Captain," she said. "I'm in the sick bay, preparing for heat-related complaints."
"Good," he said. "Don't let anyone go off duty unless they've collapsed with heat prostration. Understand me?" Marguerite's lips curved slightly.
"You don't want me to, what's the word, mollycoddle?"
Fuchs grunted.
"You don't want me to mollycoddle the crew," Marguerite finished.
"That's right," he said. "No pampering."
"Yes, Captain."
It was probably my imagination, but it seemed to get hotter in the bridge almost immediately. Or could it be my anemia, I wondered. No, fever had never been a symptom I'd experienced, I told myself. The temperature in here is rising, and fast. We were down to within 10 kilometers of sea level, the arbitrary altitude the planetary scientists had picked as a baseline for measuring the heights of Venus's uplands and the depths of her craters. The Aphrodite Terra region rose a little more than 3 clicks from its surrounding plains, so we had plenty of leeway in altitude. Aphrodite Terra was the size of Africa, and most of it looked fairly rugged on our radar maps. Finding the wreckage of one lost spacecraft was not going to be easy. For the first time, my mind began to picture what we looked like. A minuscule metal pumpkin seed floating in the dark, still, thick atmosphere of Venus. A tiny artifact from a distant world, bearing fragile creatures who needed liquid water for their existence, drifting slowly through a murky soup hot enough to boil water 3 or 4 times over, groping our way across this strange, barren, alien landscape, seeking the remains of others of our own kind who had perished in this harsh, inhospitable place. It was madness, pure and simple. No one but a madman would come here and try this. No one but a maniac such as Fuchs could look out at that blasted, scorched landscape where the rocks were hot enough to melt aluminum and find a fierce kind of beauty there. I should be home in my house by the gentle sea, where I can walk out in the open green hills and breathe the cool, wine-sharp air, brisk and free and safe. Instead, here I was, locked in a metal womb with a tyrant who was by any unbiased judgment as insane as Nero or Hitler, comparing himself to Satan incarnate, defying man and nature alike, and telling himself it was better to be supreme here in this hell than to serve some other master back on Earth or out in the Belt. And I was just as crazy, undoubtedly, because in my own foolish, haphazard way, I had worked just as hard to be in this place, and I shook my head with the realization of it. I was just as determined to play this game until the last bitter moment. That moment would end in death, I knew, either for me or for Fuchs. For the first time in my life, I resolved that I would not be the one to die. I would not be the passive little runt. I would not let others steer my life, not my father, not my frailties, not even my illness. I was going to survive, no matter what I had to do. I swore it to myself. Which was easy enough to do within my own mind. Making it work in the real world was another matter entirely. But I was determined for once to make it work, to make something of myself, to be equal to the love and trust that Alex had shown me. Suddenly, the yellow message light beneath my main screen began blinking urgently. I tapped the keyboard and the display screen spelled out, "Incoming message from Truax." Swiveling in my chair, I called out, "Captain, we have..."
"So I see," he said.
"Put it on my main screen, but under no circumstances are you to acknowledge receiving it. Understand me?"
"Understood, sir."
One of Truax's technicians appeared on the screen. She looked puzzled, intent.
"Truax to Lucifer. Our sensors have just detected a seismic disturbance of some kind in the Aphrodite region. It might be a volcanic eruption. Please acknowledge."
Volcanic eruption? I immediately remembered Professor Greenbaum and Mickey, their theory about Venus's surface overturning. The technician's face was replaced by a radar display of the western end of Aphrodite. A blinking red dot marked the site of the disturbance.
"That's nearly 1,000 kilometers from our position," Fuchs grumbled. "No problem for us."
I started to say, "But it might be..."
"Maintain course and speed," Fuchs said, ignoring me and clicking off the display.
"Should I tell Truax we received their message, sir?" I asked.
"No. No contact."
"Sir," I tried again, "that eruption might be the beginning of a major tectonic upheaval." He scowled at me.
"Then we'd better get to the phosphorus pretty damned quick, hadn't we?"
Nightside. On Earth, nights are usually cooler than days because the sun is not beaming its heat down onto the ground. On Venus, this is not so. It makes no difference if the sun is overhead or not. The thick, sluggish, cloud-topped Venusian atmosphere carries the sun's heat all the way around the planet, while Venus's slow, ponderous rotation gives that hot, soupy atmosphere plenty of time to spread its heat all across the world from pole to pole. So we sweated and grew ever more irritable in the heat as we slowly groped toward the upland of Aphrodite Terra. The heat exchanger came back online, but still it grew hotter inside the ship. The temperature outside our hull went past 200 degrees Celsius, then past 300. Still, we descended into the murk. My life became a monotonous routine of watches on the bridge, watches at the pumps, and a few hours to eat, wash, and sleep. Nodon was indeed promoted to the bridge, but Fuchs did not free me from my shifts at the comm console. I still was pulling double duty. I began to feel the first faint tendrils of my old weakness, a slightly dizzy feeling if I moved my head too suddenly, a trembling in the legs, as if they were threatening to fold under me when I walked. I wished I could feel the chill that once accompanied my anemia. A chill would have felt good in the mounting heat. I fought off the symptoms as much as I could. Mind over matter, I told myself. Sure. But even the mind is based in matter.